Coming up on Terp Weekly Edition, President Moat speaks with us before he steps down at the end of the summer.
There's a new university police chief. We'll tell you who was chosen.
And big changes are coming to Campus Drive. We'll let you know what to expect. Terp Weekly Edition starts now.
This is Terp Weekly Edition, a look at the issues and news in and around the University of Maryland College Park. Terp Weekly Edition is produced by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio.
Welcome to Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Lisa Kirkarudo.
And I'm Rob Dawson. With the semester coming to an end, we also come closer to the end of President Dan Moat's term. President Moat will step down on August 31st, and the search continues for his replacement. Last week, it was announced that the executive search firm Greenwood Asher & Associates Incorporated will assist in finding candidates for the next university president, handling paperwork and speaking with candidates who wish to remain confidential. The firm has assisted in presidential searches for Virginia Commonwealth University and Virginia State University. Greenwood and Asher was chosen for its experience and strong proposal.
And as we look to the future of the university, it is important to reflect on where we have been. Terp Weekly Edition's Rob Dawson spoke with President Dan Moat about his time here at the university.
Many people have seemed to praise the way the university has progressed since you've been here. Why resign now? Or why leave now the president's office?
Well, you know, it's important to not to stay too long in a job. 12 years is actually a long time for a presidency. And the biggest problem with staying too long in a job actually is not so much that people become unhappy with you or make it for you to leave. Problem that all the work you've done and the achievements you've made become diminished if you stay too long. So it's not a personal problem, it's actually a professional achievement problem. So if you believe you have essentially achieved what you set out to achieve and what you're able to in a reasonable period of time, it's time to leave before the party is over so that people are left with a good impression of what the institution has done. It's not the person, but the institution that matters here. So if you think in history, all the people who are remembered as having great impact in what they've tried to do on society, in every case, virtually, there are people who left that job early.
Maryland Day, it seemed to start from what I was reading a few weeks ago from pretty small beginnings of just a pad and a paper, and how has that ballooned to such a great event?
Secure place in 98. So we had to get out of our own shell, as we say. So Maryland Day was it, and there was a lot of reluctance because of this. It was a kind of, I think it was a characteristic of the university at the time, this reluctance. But it fortunately it turned out to be successful the first year, even though I was a little disappointed. We only had 21,000 people to show up. Everybody else always gets zero. So they were ecstatic over the outcome of the first year. I was a little disappointed. But 35,000 the second year, 60,000 the third year, because basically it was a value there that was huge. And once we showcased ourselves, then more and more people wanted to come. Now we have people coming from around the world literally to come to Maryland Day. So it's been very successful. People are very enthusiastic about it. In fact, it's the enthusiasm of the staff and faculty and students.
What are some of the challenges that the campus faces as you leave this year?
Well, we have always continuing challenges dealing with resources. is not like a new challenge. It's kind of a continuing challenge. But there's significant challenges. And I would say the facilities on the campus is a major challenge in Greenfield's facilities, both renovation of facilities and building new facilities. We are very much behind the curve in facilities. That's an enormous challenge.
Have you had a good time doing this?
And this is one of the jobs where you can actually do something. You can actually provide some inspiration, some guidance. And young people like yourself and others can decide to respond or not. If it sounds interesting enough and exciting enough and if enough opportunity, people will respond, especially if you deliver, if the institution can deliver, if things work in a positive way, then people are drawn to it. You essentially build up almost like a, it's almost like a movement of some kind. Shift an institution, change a culture. That's what you're doing. So it's a great privilege to have a job like this. This is not, clearly you have to work all the time, but everybody works all the time. So in a way, it's not the workload, it's the opportunity of having a job like this is tremendous. And I'm very thankful for the community on the campus, the students, the staff, the faculty, everybody who's gotten behind for this. And everybody should take a lot of pride, I think,
among the many challenges President Moat has encountered at Maryland, one of the most recent and nationally televised was the post-game riot that took place at the beginning of March. Two more students have come forward with allegations that Prince George's County Police unlawfully beat them. Senior William Wang, 23, and alumnus Christopher Booth, 21, are considering filing civil suits against the police department. But Prince George's County Police released a statement from Wang in which he said his injuries were sustained after he tripped and fell. The police department also said Wang took 7 shots of vodka that night and did not remember the events until he arrived at the hospital. Wang's lawyer still claims the injuries were from police brutality.
David Mitchell will be the new university police chief starting June 7th. The former county police chief and superintendent of Maryland State Police was chosen for his experience and local ties. One of Mitchell's biggest tasks will be mending the relationship between the community and the police after what occurred the night of the riot.
A wave of crime has swept across campus. University police spokesman Paul Dillon sent out an email to the university community announcing a theft trend of laptops, textbooks, and electronics. Terp Weekly Edition's Rob Dawson spoke with assistant police spokesman Mark Lemansky, who offered students advice on how to protect their property.
If there is an identifiable number on the device or item, and it's stolen and it's worth a certain value, it could be entered into NCIC, National Crime Information System, computer, which means that if an individual or a vehicle is stopped out there somewhere and this item is located in the car and that serial number is run by the officer, just like they would run a license plate to see if a car was stolen, they would run this number to see if an item was stolen.
Next on TERP Weekly Edition, one University of Maryland business won $15,000 last week. We'll tell you how. Welcome back to TERP Weekly Edition. Under Armour, Google, and Sirius Satellite Radio. The University of Maryland has produced its fair share of entrepreneurs. Last week, 5 more UMD startup businesses took part in the Cupid's Cup Finals, and TERP Weekly Edition's Shane Connolly checked out the competition to see if these companies have what it takes to make it big.
Good afternoon. My name is Micha Weinblatt, and I launched Crooked Monkey with a friend of mine 5 years ago at Cornerstone, right outside the University of Maryland.
How's everybody doing today? My name is Alex Harris. I'm co-owner of 207 Lobster.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Christos Sarafatos. This is my partner, Costa Donisopoulos, and we're the owners and founders of Delta Produce LLC.
Hello, my name is Brett Magrum, and I'd like to introduce Magrum Engineering, or what I like to refer to as ME.
Good afternoon. My name is Paul Capriolo. I'm co-founder of Social Growth Technologies.
Those were the contenders for the 5th annual Cupid's Cup. Each business spent 6 minutes presenting their company to a panel of judges including Under Armour founder and CEO Kevin Plank. The company's vast differences offered the judges some interesting choices between a produce delivery service, a t-shirt company, a lobster delivery service, a cell phone tower research group, and a company looking to monetize virtual currency. After the presentation of his company, Social Growth Technology, a company that allows online games to profit off of virtual money spent within the game, Paul Capriolo had mixed emotions about his performance.
I rushed it a little, but I think I got the major points across.
But after the judges discussed the presentations and Plank gave the audience an update on his business, Under Armour, the judges revealed that Capriolo had nothing to worry about.
For the first place team and the winner of $15,000, and more importantly, the bragging rights, the Cupid's Cup. Drum roll, please.
According to Plank, Social Growth Technology's big picture view is what set them apart.
I think they were big. I mean, we're looking for transformational things that, you know, tell me the next huge idea that can come from the University of Maryland. And not local, not regional, but we want, you know, national and global.
An elated Capriolo agreed that the limitless potential is what makes their company so appealing.
You know, I think we're in a really interesting space. I mean, we're talking about social media and virtual currency monetization. It's basically the hottest, fastest growing thing on the internet right now. I mean, Facebook almost has 450 million users today. And a billion people are playing, you know, virtual currency-based applications.
But before they can reach billions of people, they need to hire more employees. Capriolo will use the $15,000 to help pay for their fifth employee, who they added just last week. I'm Shane Connolly, Terp Weekly Edition.
Coach Eric Backage's first season as the Terrapins baseball coach ended much the same way that previous Maryland baseball seasons ended, in disappointment and out of the ACC tournament. Despite that, Tony Herman learned from the seniors that this season was one they would remember.
On the surface, the Maryland baseball team's record won't look much different than it has in the past. The Terps got off to a good start in conference play, but faded down the stretch, at one point losing 9 in a row. Their home season ended with a 7-5 defeat at the hands of Clemson on their senior day. However, first-year coach Eric Backage hopes that the new attitude instilled in the team this spring will set the team up to do great things in coming years.
There's a culture of energy in this program now, and you can hear it, you can see it, and there's no quit.
That excitement is largely due to the coach himself. From the grueling practices to the coaching ejections, the team has adapted his personality. For his part, however, Backage wanted to thank the seniors.
The seniors as a group have been everything and more than I could have ever asked for coming in with my first year. They've been great leaders. They've been all been an extension of the coaching staff. They deserve all the credit for changing the culture here.
Backage thought it was easy for the seniors to buy into his system because he promised Maryland baseball something it hadn't had in recent years. Hope.
I think from talking to them, they were looking for new blood, they were looking for new energy, they were looking for, you know, new culture, and they wanted to, you know, they were thirsty for some new enthusiasm to surround this program.
One of those seniors is first baseman and closer Dan Gensler. He said that the transition between coaching staffs was seamless because of who Backage is at a personal level.
As far as the transition itself, it really wasn't hard. I mean, you know, the coaches are all great guys. You know, they're really good at working with us.
Senior outfielder Mike Rozak agreed.
With him, I mean, he brought a lot of energy. He's a great guy. And he just, you know, he had us all buy in. And it went from the top down, from the coaching staff, and the seniors, juniors, sophomores, freshmen, and the parents and everyone around. Like, I mean, he instilled in us, like, a win and a drive. And
for those two, next year will provide different things. Gensler will pursue a job in economics after he exhausts his professional baseball possibilities, and Rozak wants to travel before settling back down and going to medical school. Both will be doing different things, but both will remember this year for a long time. Gensler will remember being given the opportunity to hit for the first time.
I was never a home run hitter when I was younger, and, you know, I had never experienced it before, especially on a college level, so, you know, just to be able to come through like that.
And Rozak said he'll remember just how much the program changed this year.
It's just, you know, we never quit as a whole. Not even just the seniors, just everyone never quit at any point this whole year.
which only leaves thoughts of what might be in years to come.
You know, I just have a feeling after playing this year and, you know, just knowing how things are changing and turning around here that this program's definitely got a lot of room to go up, and they will.
In College Park, Maryland, I'm Tony Herman, Terp Weekly Edition.
The university has found another way to be environmentally friendly, but it's causing some students a major inconvenience. Last week, the Transportation Services and Facilities Management departments announced the section of Campus Drive between the M and Cole Fieldhouse will temporarily be a pedestrian-only street during the summer. Disabled students are concerned about access to their classes and maneuvering the campus's steep hills. Associate Vice President for Facilities Management, Frank Brewer, says disabled students will be accommodated with an on-demand disability-only shuttle service provided by the university. The university's plan is to test the proposal during campus's low volume, and if successful, extend it to a year-round measure. Emily Mechnick has more on this story.
As hundreds of commuters use Campus Drive on a daily basis, 5,500 to be exact, it's easily the busiest on campus. But could this main road soon be restricted to only pedestrians and bicyclists? According to university officials, they propose to restrict access to the road this summer as part of an initiative to make the campus more pedestrian-friendly.
And it's part of a facilities master plan that was developed a decade or so ago. And there have been updates. The most recent update was in 2007. And it's to bring more pedestrian feel to the core of campus.
Students gathered in the Margaret Brent Room of the Stamp Student Union for a Student Government Association-sponsored public forum and didn't hesitate to fire questions at officials.
How do you get to those places at night when it's a safety issue, walking around by yourself in the dark?
How is this part of your plan to get student input when you didn't even plan this?
The forum was planned by SGA Director of Environmental Affairs, Joanna Calabrese.
This came to my attention just serendipitously, like when I was having a casual conversation with an administrator.
National transportation planners like cautioned the university against creating this shuttle loop that students had to transfer onto because it just doesn't make sense, you know?
I think it won't work ultimately, but you know, I think there really should have been a little bit more input going in. I mean, I didn't see one person that was supportive of the plan here today. It was almost universally people like the idea of closing the campus drive to cars, but not to transit.
Bottom line is that the questions are left unanswered and the community is left unsatisfied. For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Emily Mechnick reporting.
Next on Terp Weekly Edition, we'll tell you about an addiction that's sweeping across college campuses. Could you be one of the victims? Stay tuned. Welcome back. When you hear the word addiction, you might think drugs and alcohol, not cell phones and computers. However, these days, social media may have the same addictive effect. Journalism professor Susan Moeller and her graduate assistants tested out the theory with her media literacy class. Terp Weekly Edition's Mallory Werthammer has more.
Around 200 university students participated in a study called 24 Hours Unplugged, testing levels of addiction to social media. Students were asked to give up all media, including cell phones and computers, among many things, for 24 hours. While some could and some couldn't, they all had a lot to say about it. Graduate student Jessica Roberts tells us more.
I'm one of the TAs in the course, so gave the assignment, graded the assignment, and along with five other TAs, we went through, voted, you know, all of the responses from the, you know, 190 or so students.
Although the results were somewhat expected, they were still shocking.
We were expecting to see a little more reflection on the awareness of information in their lives, and I think we were surprised by how emotionally connected they are to devices and the extent to which they were using they realized that they were using technology for everything. It turned out a little differently than we were expecting, I guess.
Junior business major Kara Jacoby heard about the study and was surprised that so many people completed it.
I was on my BlackBerry, whether it be looking at my email or texting or going online to look something up.
And when asked if she would participate, she said,
I would like to say yes, but if I'm being honest, no, because I wouldn't like not feeling connected to the world. Plus, I'm so used to it, so to take something away that I've grown accustomed to, like checking my email 24/7, I think I'd have a hard time. I'd be nervous a lot because you can't reach somebody.
Her opposition to 24 hours unplugged and her emotional response were not uncommon, even among the participants.
Oh, I saw a lot of that, and not all of them, had that kind of reaction. But to be honest, I identified a little bit with their responses because, you know, I do check my email like first thing when I get up in the morning, and then, you know, whenever I'm in front of a computer, immediately think that I need to check again, and the panic if you leave your phone at home. So I wasn't that surprised that they missed their devices or their connection to the rest of the world through, you know, what the devices gave them. But I was a little surprised by the extent of the reaction, the physical responses, that, like, I felt jittery, I felt nervous, frustrated. I was amazed how many of them admitted that they were irritable.
So what did the results of the study show?
Technology and the way we're using digital media now and communication devices is changing the way that we behave and changing our relationships and changing the way we think about relationships. But it seems like we can all recognize that something has happened. We're talking about doing sort of a more scholarly, publishable analysis of the materials. I'm going to do this again next year. And find out, you know, if this sort of thing goes, you know, carries on to the next semester of students.
For all those who didn't participate in the study, Roberts has a recommendation for you.
If they haven't done it, I think that everybody should try it, just to see how it feels and to sort of identify their own attachments and what we consider media literacy, which is sort of an awareness of how information is affecting us and the role it's playing in our lives, and, you know, sort of taking it away is one way of figuring out what it's been doing while it's there.
For Terp Weekly Edition, I'm Mallory Werthamer.
75 incoming honor students in the new Digital Cultures and Creativity program will be getting more than just an education. As part of the university's mobility initiative, the students will receive iPads for free. An additional 160 students will receive an iPhone or iPod Touch. The goal is for students to familiarize themselves with the technology tools used in learning. The gadgets will be paid for by the Mobility Initiative and other units associated with the DCC program.
As the school year wraps up, seniors are both excited and nervous about graduation. Terp Weekly Edition's Greg Sussman caught up with a few of them to discuss their plans for life after Maryland.
Well, what are your thoughts on graduating?
I don't want to graduate. I don't ever want to leave Maryland.
It's good. I'm definitely in a hurry because I'm really sick of it. I work all the time anyway, so I'd rather just work full time and make more money and not do homework.
So pumped. So ready. Awesome.
Well, I'm not looking forward to graduating, to be honest. Now's a bad time to be a journalism major with the major transitional phase that the industry is in.
The real world isn't going to be fun, at least not as fun as the college world that we live in. Because there aren't drink specials in the real world, or at least not $1 drink specials. There's happy hour, but have you ever been to a DC bar? You can't get $1 anything. I'll miss that terribly.
Can't believe it's here, and on the other end, I wish I had more time to go.
Probably moving back in with mom and dad. They've created a nice little bachelor pad for me in the basement. Got a TV and a couch down there, and we got like a mini fridge for my beer. Anyways, in case you were wondering what that sound was, it was me getting so angry at you asking the question of what I'm going to do. I smashed a beer bottle over my head.
What are you doing after graduation?
I have a government job, so I'm just going to make bank and chill out.
I have an internship with the Miami Herald.
I'm unemployed. Well, I am actually moving home and playing with my dog, but in my free time, I'm going to be a reporter. Yeah, putting this thing called a journalism degree to use.
I have a job at the business school on campus. I am a staff writer for their teen magazines and for their online website, because, you know, websites are online.
I am probably working at the Buck Center at least through mid-June and maybe late July, and if not, I'm taking my summer camp job and trying to find a real job.
Your guess is as good as mine. I haven't started looking yet, but well, I have started looking, and two things fell through. Yeah, probably cheerleading.
It's the end of the semester, and with summertime comes the prospect of a good few months of relaxation. But how will your classmates really be spending their break? Lisa Kirkaruto asked around.
Summer going big.
I'm going to Disney World.
I'm going to Lebanon this summer. Nice vacation, having a good time, chilling, smoking, drinking.
I'm studying abroad in Greece for all of June.
Summer looking for money.
Well, right now I'm looking for a job. Like just about everyone else in this campus.
Gonna be hustling some yogurt at Yogi Berry. Very dishonest, horrible job.
I will probably be around College Park a lot because in July I'm working at a summer arts camp for kids to teach them art.
Summer actually getting busier.
I'm running my own company because I owned a company last summer. It's a landscaping company.
I'm gonna be taking two summer courses and I'm probably gonna be working two jobs. I'll be working at a hotel and I'll be working at Outback Steakhouse.
So I'm gonna be working at a summer camp, a golf course, and on a ferry between Philly and Camden.
But some say not all their summer jobs are that bad.
I want to get home and work at CVS Pharmacy. It's really a great place to work.
I'm working from my house, slopping soft crabs. It should be interesting.
This summer I'm working in Ocean City. I'm a beach lifeguard. Greatest job ever. I get tan, I save people's lives. I get paid pretty well.
And while many are working for money, others are working simply for experience.
I'm going to be doing an internship at the Department of the Interior Museum downtown.
I'm going to intern at Booz Allen Hamilton in McLean, Virginia, and probably race bikes and commute by bike out there from Silver Spring.
I'm interning at J.P. Morgan in Newark, Delaware for the summer.
But if there was one common trend of thoughts for the summer, it was this.
So excited. It's like an adventure.
I'm going to try to plan as many adventures as possible.
Yeah, it's pretty dang.
In College Park, I'm Lisa Kirkaruto, Terp Weekly Edition.
That's all for Terp Weekly Edition. I'm Rob Dawson.
And I'm Lisa Kirkaruto. Don't forget, you can take us with you. You can find podcasts of all our shows at www.twe.umd.edu. Have a great summer.
This has been Terp Weekly Edition, produced and written by students of the Philip Merrill College of Journalism in cooperation with WMUC Radio. Please join us next week at the same time for a look at the issues in and around the University of Maryland College Park.